Colin Russo kicking things off here with our BDB Business of the Month on ESPN West Palm. We're live at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. Joined now by the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of SROA Capital, it's Ben McFarland. Benny Mac joining us now. Mr. McFarland, appreciate giving us the time. How are we doing today?
Happy to do it, Colin. Thanks for having me.
So give me a little, first of all, I got a little background on your baseball side of things. We'll get into that a little later in the interview. But I'm curious because you're born and raised here, and you spent the last 24 years here with SROA. And talk to me a bit about how this career sort of started for you. When did you know you wanted to get into this type of thing? The investment side of things, the acquisition, development. When did you know that this was the right thing for you and that this is something you wanted to pursue?
Sure. Appreciate it. Look, I think it's you're born, raised here. Things are moving, changing. I really got into business through the service side of things. Started a parking business, valet business in Tallahassee when I went up there for Florida State for college. Mm. And they didn't have a valet parking stand in downtown Tallahassee. So met some folks there and popped up a valet stand, signed a deal with the city for the part of the garage.
As a college student?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, you could rush a fraternity, but, you know, in my opinion, as long as you watch the rush for the sorority system, you probably got indoctrinated anyways. So,
right.
So then I signed up the Governor's Club, the Capitals, sort of downtown area, the stadium, the hospital, and then sold that business senior year and decided to work with the with an appraiser that was involved with the eminent domain appraiser of the state of Florida. That was a professor of mine, and sold the business in like the storage student sort of niche businesses, operating businesses, and storage sort of worked and continued to make money through the GFC and stuck with that business. So,
and you've moved on. You started, of course, at the college side of things. What made you want to come back to this area? South Florida, was it home to you, or is it something where you saw a lot of future development in the future?
No, I mean, life happens. Things happen. So family obligations brought me back here. And so I decided to keep doing deals and eventually you decide to build an operating business around real estate. And that's sort of how I got into the storage space. So,
and then talk to me a little bit about SROA Capital, starting it, co-founder, chief executive officer. Now, how has it grown and how has it really expanded? Well, now I look at this, I'm fresh to Palm Beach County, and Palm Beach County, from what I've heard, is almost unrecognizable comparatively to even South Florida 10, 15, 20 years ago. And talk to me about your business and how that sort of rolled with the times from that regard.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, look, I was growing up, this stuff was all people were trying to attempt to assemble this downtown market. 100 years ago, it was pretty bustling market for as far as South Florida and things go. 100 years later, it's a different place. Buildings are taller. The grid's still the same. You've got certain buildings that have been around for 100 years downtown. But yeah, in the late 90s, you could start buying light industrial 1950s prefab warehouses in downtown West Palm. A company called All AC Self Storage was an early mover on taking these buildings, converting them to self storage. So I sort of worked with that owner to get into the business through converting industrial buildings. So you could buy a building for $20-$30 a foot and convert it to self storage instead of getting industrial rents at $4-$6 rents. You'd get self storage, climate control, chop it up into 500 little units and get $16-$18 rents.
So it's a little opportunistic because you got to almost identify, all right, there's an opportunity here to take advantage of a cheaper side of acquiring a building or something like that and then converting it.
It was completely opportunistic. It's development. You know, you did some ground up stuff. and then it survived really well. So I was rolling up student. I rolled up almost 10,000 student housing beds across 8 states. And then I was doing organically growing a storage business out of South Florida. GFC, the storage holds up better than any other asset class. It's got resistance to recession type environment. People move up and down the economic ladder. They run into trouble. They need storage. They growing their business. They need storage. They get a divorce. They need storage. Grandma dies. They need storage. And they're not building basements and attics and homes with smaller bedrooms, and apartments with smaller bedrooms are being built, and it goes on and on and on, and population growth enhances. Amazon starts pumping you full of awesome stuff you can buy. Right. You
have it's too easy.
You have a kid or two, and all of a sudden you've got, you know,
kids grow up, and all of a sudden you don't need the carriage anymore.
I mean, heck, the garage is full. Then COVID hits. You got to work from home. All of a sudden you're like, I got to get rid of all this stuff, and you put it in storage. And I mean, the story just goes on and on. And so you're making a bet on the fact that humans generally want to consume, and you're making a bet that population will continue to grow, and that people will continue to have stuff, and technology replaces a lot of things. Maybe it replaces some paper, and you make that digital. But at the end of the day, like,
people like physical things.
You need a couch to sit on, I think.
Right. That's not going digital anytime soon.
I don't think so. I mean,
keep it in mind.
You got to plug in completely, you know.
Don't you think you mentioned no attics, no basements. That's sort of how Florida houses and properties are built. That sort of leans itself into the storage, I guess, business being pretty profitable and pretty useful in this area comparatively to other parts of the country, where basements, attics, barns, garages, separate on-property storages are more available. Is that something that went into the thought process? I'm just thinking out loud here.
I mean, it matters here. Really here, you're like, hey, there's a ton of humidity, and if I'm going to keep something stored, it's going to mold unless I...
That's another good point.
Store it dry.
With the weather. That's another good
blah,
point.
Blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, now... nationally, nobody's building attics and basements by choice. They don't get money out of it. So, you know, as cost of construction goes up, as inflation exists, as things get more expensive to do. So this is a commodity-based business. So getting ahead of that, building a technology business around it allows the firm to manage, not just in the US, but now in the UK, across, you know, 700 assets, mm-hmm. You know, allows us to, one, you know, protect capital, have large public pension and insurance companies invest capital at scale with us. And so we can deploy and do large, you know, regional multi-state operational takeovers. You've got hundreds of thousands of tenants versus, like, If you come downtown West Palm and you go buy an office building, if Steve Ross hasn't bought them all, you go and sign a lease with, you know, 15 different companies and you're done. You know, I've got 80% of my rent roll churning every year, essentially. And so you've got a lot of move-ins, a lot of move-outs, and it's a business-to-consumer type product, not a B2B business-to-business right. product. And so it's a different animal.
Ben McFarland, of course, the CEO of SROA Capital, joining us now for our BDB Business of the Month on ESPN West Palm. For those who don't know, I guess if you're trying to explain to the audience a little bit of what SROA, you mentioned a plethora of different opportunities there are for the people that you are renting to in terms of what type of storage you could offer to who. Is it the businesses that you guys specialize in? Is it anything? Is it families?
It's all the above. It's if the easiest way for anyone to know what we do is it's called Storage Rentals of America, SROA.com. You can go and rent a unit online, but like you've seen Storage Wars, maybe people like that show.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what it is. It's roll-up doors. It's hundreds of thousands of roll-up doors around the US.
So you've seen, yeah, that you see your fair share of the, you know, people just like to have things. They don't like to get rid of things. That's the interesting thing. And you mentioned something interesting, you know, when all of a sudden you got to clear out grandma's house and you realize that there's so much stuff that you don't necessarily need, but you don't want to get rid of.
Don't want to throw it out. You want to, yeah, it's nostalgic. Some of it, maybe it's
you don't know if it's valuable. You're going to go through it eventually, see if anything's valuable.
There might be a document or two you might need, you know, who knows what's in there.
And I guess that's something that people don't necessarily understand that they need until it happens. And then all of a sudden,
you're essentially resolving a problem. So like,
don't worry about it. It's pushing it off.
Yeah. And it's like, hey, my daughter didn't tell me that she had to be out of the dorms next week. And I'm driving towards this facility with a U-Haul full of stuff. And I hope you have a 10x10 or a 10x20 so I can like put all this stuff in it.
Right.
Or whatever. And so that's sort of the business. So it's a, I need this now situation, because you don't roll over on Sunday morning and talk to your significant other about whether or not there's a pool at the storage facility and whether or not the spa is going to be nice or whether or not the sheet count is nice. You're like, is it dry? Is it secure? Does it have cameras? Is it functional? Is it safe? Is it lit?
Check the boxes.
Can I get in? Can I get out? Like, and how fast can I do that? You know, really not like, hey, I want to hang out here. And so you get in really easily, right?
Right.
And you can get out without your stuff. But man, do you have to spend like 4 days in that place to try and sort it all out before you can move out? And so tenants stay with you for a little bit. You know, your average length of stay could be 18 to 22 months.
Wow.
So you have a real opportunity to protect your cash flow through that as an investor. And so a lot of folks, especially in the institutional investment world, have gravitated towards the business as a place to find consistent, reliable cash flow for their constituents, whether that's primarily a big chunk of our investors are pensions on the behalf of teachers and nurses and firefighters and police around the U.S.
And just taking a look at just the amount of new properties and the amount of expansion that you guys are undergoing right now, all over the country, all over the place, you are getting continuously more and more properties and more areas of the United States and the whole thing. Talk to me about what was the strategy behind expanding? Was it just kind of go as far as possible? There's no end to this thing? Do we start slow and kind of trickle our way forward? How was it when you really started to expand outward from Florida and everything? How did that work out?
Yeah, I mean, it was a scrappy sort of business that wasn't
right. Recognized.
Public Storage, PSA ticker, has been at this for a while, but there wasn't a storage facility on record that was built as roll-up doors like this that a consumer could go and rent until the late 1970s. So like your grandparents did not use self-storage likely, right?
Right.
And so then
the new concept,
it's sort of like in the last 50 years became something, and it wasn't really large enough at scale, but real estate developers nationally built over 60,000 of these things. There's a shadow inventory of these things. The Self-Storage Association probably tracks 50 to 55,000 of these things that people actually like say, hey, I'm in the storage business. 75% of these people own less than five properties or just built one and just own one. And most of those folks built these in the 90s and 2000s, and they're from this baby boomer generation that doesn't have legacy plans for a business like that, that has been run by a family member, specifically husband, wife, typical team, where they're like, this is my savings. We're in the construction business forever, and we decided to build a storage facility. Or we were in the landscaping business. We had this piece of land. We built a self-storage facility. We were in the moving business. Should I decide to build a self-storage facility? Whatever it is. And that's their retired job. And back then they would live on site and they would have an apartment and they would rent you a unit. And so now fast forward, go through the great financial crisis. The internet comes along before that. And this idea of aggregating technology across multiple states and the ability to manage in a centralized location, I decided to headquarter the business here because I'm from here. It made sense. So I had to stand up a call center. I had to stand up a tech department, a help desk services, an insurance claims department, all these things that all these businesses, there's probably 10 businesses within side SROA that operate this sort of global self-storage business above and beyond everything else. So construction, all the maintenance, the gates, the cameras, the video, everything that comes into the security, the lighting, all these things, roll up door, fixing springs, latches. So we employ 900 people globally, roughly pushing 1,000. And it's a business. So that's sort of, and it's, there's 150 people in corporate, 50 here. So there's 200 people in West Palm Beach.
Wow.
And we're headquartered at 2751 South Dixie. Our headquarters is where the old Palm Beach Post was.
Right.
So that's sort of, so you'll see SROA Capital at the top of that building. And, you know, recently moved, Palm Beach Atlantic University is expanding faster than they can build buildings. So we brought PBAU in for their nursing program to expand. We've got traction now from, I've been working on it for years to bring a finance sort of add-on that Florida State University is providing for registered investment advisors to get their extending their credits that they need to keep their licenses renewed is moving into the building. So we've got different things. You got Vandy coming downtown here. So as businesses have moved, you know, I'm technically a global private equity asset manager business model.
Right.
So we raise vehicles and funds in a commingled fund structure on a 10-year life vehicle. And we pay quarterly, you know, distributions throughout that. And then you're likely to take it to market and sell to provide liquidity back to the pensions, or they decide that they want it to roll over, whatever the exit strategy is at the end. So, you know, and some of the vehicles are evergreen. So it's, there's different ways to think about it, but we're protection, high cash flow type business model that allows you to get some, you know, wealth creation or appreciation creation to the public pension or insurance company, through both cash flow and asset appreciation.
Ben McFarland, the CEO of SROA Capital, joining us on BDB Business of the Month, ESPN West Palm. You mentioned closing in on 1,000 employees you guys have working for you. Did you ever expect the expansion to reach this level? And as the CEO, co-founder yourself, managing a team like this, of course you have delegation, you have different areas and like this, but since you're headquartered right here in West Palm Beach, what has changed for you as a leader of the team to change how you sort of view this, how you operate because of the just sheer amount of people that you have now with the company?
You know, there's producers and then there's overhead and then there's things you have to do. The day-to-day of what I enjoy the most about it is the investment side of it, the development, the acquisition, the, you know, doing the deals, making sure that we're finding the right opportunities. But yeah, you got to step back and now spend some time with the human resources department that you didn't have to deal with in the past, and resolve issues. And, you know, there's governmental regulations that start to step in for various things as you grow and you have certain amount of employees and health insurance and benefits and all the things that you're trying to do to continue to be a business that people want to work at and grow and be a place that people want to show up to. So we didn't really shut down in COVID. We're considered essential business. So yeah, there's some work from home folks that still find that to be part of their lifestyle. But, you know, our business was essential. We have lots of utility. I mean, even FedEx and UPS
utilize our services around the U.S. for smaller markets, last mile distribution, medical services for hospitals that use us for temporary storage and overflow. So, you know, we've found that, you know, we've got an important niche and we provide a service. And so, yeah, day to day, there's new things that happen, but my main focus is spending time with investors and making sure that we're finding the right opportunities. So it puts me in a plane quite a bit. So I'm in a plane a lot.
Yeah. So. Ben, one thing that you told me before we started here, which really took me by surprise, especially because my actual connection to this certain team, but you brought some memorabilia and you were telling me how you are a descendant of Benjamin Scheib. And for those who don't know, Benjamin Scheib was one of the first owners of the Philadelphia Athletics, one of the crucial pieces.
Well, I think it was the founder of it.
Right, because in 1901, the founder of the Philadelphia Athletics, and somebody who it started to embolden baseball in Philadelphia. And so baseball's in your blood to a sense, huh? Give the audience a little sense of sort of the descendancy and Scheib's legacy and how that kind of rolled through with baseball with the Philadelphia Athletics.
Yeah, I think Scheib's legacy is probably something that, you know, has been taken over by Connie Mack's sort of prominence and forward-fronting visibility in the business. So no one really talks about Ben Scheib's efforts and really what he did.
Because Mack was there for 55 years.
Well, I mean, ultimately he hired him and financed him into the team and so on and so forth. And I'm friendly with the McGillicuddy family and their descendants. And a lot of them live over in a good portion of them live over on the west coast of Florida. And look, the reality is that early days, before you had all these amazing things that you could do with franchising brands and royalties and what sports has become today, you had these guys that, Ben Scheib was their Dutch descendant came over, or the Scheibs came over in the 1700s, and they were leather manufacturer type, you know, tradesmen, just like everybody right. That moved here. We came from somewhere, and
it's when baseball wasn't that big.
Baseball wasn't a thing. I mean, there was this thing that people were doing, and he said, hey, I can provide literally gloves, balls, bats, stuff, sporting goods. So he's like, oh, I'm going to finance a team and let's do this thing and we'll call it the Philadelphia Athletics. And oh my gosh. Okay. So now how do I become, now there's a couple club teams around, right? In the late 1800s.
Right.
And how do I get all these guys to agree to use my sporting goods? So do you know what he did? He created the American League around it. Right. And so that's why the monopoly laws are so strong in sports generally, is because this guy saw a way to provide his sporting goods. And it was AJ Reach back then and company, and then later became AJ Reach and Spalding.
Right.
And then later became Spalding Sporting Goods. Right. But at the end of the day, this guy was very entrepreneurial. And so some of my inspiration around that was because of that. And the only reason I was born in West Palm Beach, you know, nine generations later from the first folks that came over was because they brought baseball to Florida in the 20s. And they followed this guy, Henry Flagler, down probably as my guest. So you had baseball fields where the Kravis Center was. That was, you know, Connie Mack's fields there later. And Connie Mack Stadium was the renamed Scheib Park. And then you even had the farm leagues and the different African-American leagues that popped up. I believe the end of Clematis, if I recall, is a triangle because it was a African-American league team.
Right.
That baseball field originally, it was a baseball diamond at the point of that, not a fountain that kids run through with Clematis by night now,
yeah.
You know? So, I mean, baseball has its place in history in the U.S. It has its place in the history of the world.
West Palm Beach.
I think the most significant documents and different things that I have, besides eulogies and signing docs and things that have been passed on, and trophies and balls and signature after signature, but it's like the 1934 All-Star team came to Florida, and the photos that I have, the Japanese didn't create signs that said welcome All-Star team. It says welcome Team Florida in the photos. And that's because Ben Scheib was promoting, Thomas Scheib, his son, was promoting baseball spring training in Florida and wanted the world to know what was going on. And it was Team Florida that went to Japan pre-World War II. Mm. If you can think about that in the photos and the stadiums, and Babe Ruth filled these stadiums, right? And Babe Ruth is an interesting guy, obviously. We can all read about him and see some video and footage.
Right, you only know so much.
Yeah, but he signed the top of every page. Like, he's the first guy. He's the middle of the ball. He's the, you know, it starts there and then it goes down and there's the pecking order and always start with him. So he commanded a pretty good crowd, I'd imagine. And, you know, the streets of Japan were full, right? Right before.
That's absurd. Yeah, that's incredible. That was, you know, 5 years before the start of World War II.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so, you know, you see these things and you're like, wow, you know, where do the turns make? So I decided to be headquartered here. It's a family sort of legacy choice decision. I got 5 kids.
Wow. You know,
they all go to Palm Beach Day School here locally.
So you got young kids.
Yeah, I've got a 13, a 12, a 10, a 7, and a 4-year-old. And so it's a busy household over there at the McFarland residence.
Yeah, it's going to be sports season, I assume, yeah. The whole thing. So you're going to have a packed house there, everybody bouncing around doing their little hobbies, right?
It's a busy place. Yeah, so there's people running around doing stuff for sure.
You exit one circus and you enter into the next circus. That's how this goes, especially raising
kids. Yeah, I think
kids.
There'll be like 10 or 12 7-year-olds at my house on Friday after school, you know.
Gosh, so. I could only imagine.
Just crank up the foam machine, watch them run around.
Right,
the lawn.
Tire them out. Yeah, there we go. They'll all be passed out by the end of it. Yeah. We're good to go. Well, Ben, I appreciate you giving us the time, giving us a little sense of SROA Capital's history, what they're trying to do in not only Palm Beach County, but nationwide, being headquartered right here in West Palm Beach. And definitely a little history into the Philadelphia Athletics, who, of course, won multiple championships. You know, won the 3 World Series there in the later parts of the early parts, the 1910s, and then won a little later on in the 20s. So it's a historic team. They got 9 championships total as a franchise. And yep. I'm an A's fan. So I'm an Oakland A's fan. I wasn't around for that, but I'm an A's fan, and we're trying to return to that glory. It's been a long time since 89.
Hey, I was in Sacramento last week on Monday.
Did you go to a game?
I tried to. It was on a Sunday. I landed on a Monday.
You don't need to go to a game. You don't need to. That place stinks.
I'm just saying. You've been to the stadium, I'm sure.
The Sacramento Stadium? I have not been to the Sacramento Stadium. The thing is, I was annoyed that they left Oakland.
Of course, yeah.
I didn't think the exit was not clean, but them being in a minor league ballpark, and they got a pretty good team. They're playing terrible right now, but they got a pretty good team this year. And I hate the fact that it's in a 10,000 seat ballpark that puts 6,000 in the seats a night, and they do the post game availability. I'm not sure if you've seen this, in a shed in the parking lot, and that's where they do the media. It's a little college like, and I don't like that for a professional baseball team.
I unfortunately can't disagree, and I can't say anything that's, you know.
Yes, I understand.
Puts us in a situation.
I understand.
But what I can tell you,
than I do, I can say this as a fan.
Getting out of California is probably the best thing for the team.
Las Vegas in a couple of years, but that's going to take a while. We're not going to see Las Vegas for two or three at least years.
Well, if I was the owner of the club, which I'm not, but you know, these days you can syndicate out a piece. Maybe he'll sell me something if he feels like getting, you know, with the idea of coming back to Florida. Maybe there's something to talk about. But
West Palm Beach Athletics, I'd be at every game.
Hey, man. I mean, downtown West Palm, we almost got, you know, Baltimore to do their stadium down here for spring training. But I think this market's starved for baseball. I think Miami's too far south, and I think, you know, this is where baseball sort of lives and breathes.
So much history. Even if you go up to Vero and you got Dodger Town up there, and you know, you get the Jackie Robinson history up there, and then you could just go down to Jupiter right now. And
oh, it's
West
great.
Palm.
I brought the kids over to see Mark Shalaba over there at the Nationals, and saw Rizzo and Lerner there for spring training, and took 8 boys through there to let them run around and high five the team. Look, I think it's a special place. You know, you've got a lot of it over on the West Coast, but there's no professional team, really what I call, like, you know, Florida, old Florida here. I mean, yeah, Miami's Miami, but it's...
Yeah, people are coming to Palm Beach County, and they're still sports fans. There's just...
a lot of sports fans.
You don't pick up Miami, like you said. You don't pick that up.
Yeah, in Miami, you're not going down to Miami. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a tough haul, but, like, okay, the stadium for football is a lot farther north.
Right.
Right, so you're not...
Lone Depot is a hike. You got to get down to downtown Miami.
You're in the trenches down there.
Yeah. And I went to Lone Depot to go to a Marlins-A's game about 2.5 weeks ago. I went in a Saturday game, and the A's had a 8-4 lead going into the eighth inning. And I thought I'd beat the traffic and get out of there because they got Mason Miller, who's their great closer.
What happened?
And he gave up a grand slam to lose the game.
No. God, I mean, I can't keep track of that pain.
He came up a grand slam to lose a walk-off grand slam for the Miami Marlins of all team, who stink.
And all you're thinking is, I shouldn't have left. I shouldn't have left the traffic.
Well, the thing about it is, do I even want to watch that? Like, watch my team collapse in that? You want to see something like that, but you don't want to watch it collapse.
No.
Nonetheless, Ben, I appreciate you giving us the time. I appreciate you sitting down with me and breaking down all that history there with SROA Capital. Looking forward to speaking again soon.
All right, take care.
That's Ben McFarland, of course, the CEO and a co-founder of SROA Capital. It's our BDB Business of the Month on ESPN West Palm.